Welcome to the Film 5D Podcast, episode 14 of the Film 5D Podcast. We're back again.
Again.
For maybe the first and only time in September. We've got a pretty big, busy month coming up, so we'll see. But this might be the only one we get to do this month. We're doing it right at the start of the month. It's September 4th right now. Go ahead and set my timer for the podcast. What came out this week? Actually, what am I doing? We need... Jumping right into it. I need to go through the rundown. Wow.
Oh my gosh, Aaron, I'm ashamed.
It's all right. We could start over, but that's fine. So we're going to talk about what came out this week, and then we're going to talk about some news and rumors, mostly coming out of Sony, in terms of their E-mount, Alpha brand, but a few other things, including something from Canon, possibly. And then we're going to have our first ever film glossary term battle. Or you have terms for me, and I have terms for you, and we're going to duke it out, best of five, and see who wins.
Okay.
And then in your segment, you're talking about... I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't even remember.
I'm talking about virtual reality goggles again.
Virtual reality goggles again?
Yeah. Yeah,
because... All right, we'll see what new spin you put on it, because good thing I didn't do any research then. All right, and then we are going to have... our traditional segment five fight, and this time we're doing best cameo in a movie. And once again, we don't know what we're gonna argue for, so it'll be interesting to see.
What's a cameo?
Come on. Okay. All right. So what? Let's go quote of the week first. I can't even read my own writing. For relaxing times. Make it Centauri time.
What is that?
It is the ever-repeated line of this famous early 2000s movie starring Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray.
I have no idea what that is.
Lost in Translation.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that movie.
Very good movie. You should check it out. Mm. All right. Anyways, what came out this week? We're here on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Of course, my notifications keep popping up, but...
The Transporter Refueled.
Which has the guy, I just realized, I kept seeing the trailers, and I was like, that looks like Dario Naharis from... Or the original Dario Naharis from Game of Thrones before he got fired and replaced by somebody else the last two seasons. He was in one season of Game of Thrones, season three.
What?
As a second son.
How does he know
what a car is? And the lover of Daenerys Targaryen. What?
How does he know what a car is?
I don't know why they're still making... Let's talk about that for a second. I wasn't going to really talk about this movie, but cause it's only got 17%. But why do you think they keep making these Transporter movies after Jason Statham's gone? It's kind of like when they made that one Bourne movie without Matt Damon, mm-hmm. which I actually liked, but it didn't get... It wasn't nearly as good as the original three. It had Jeremy Renner. Now they're going to do a fifth one, and I believe Matt Damon's coming back. So if Mission Impossible, if Tom Cruise decided not to do another Mission Impossible, I don't think they should do another one. Like, why? Come up with a different idea and make a different franchise and make someone else, make Tom Hart, like what they did with Mad Max, or like now they rebooted it and stuff. They're just like continuing on. It's kind of weird. Mm. What do you think?
I don't know. I never really watched Transporter. Cause...
I only saw the first one, I believe. I think they kind of went downhill. Yeah, I mean, it was cool. It was like... It was a very perfect role for Jason Statham. A lot of action, not too much talking.
Just a little
quippy, yeah. Cool looking ball guy. The only movie I have on the list is Dope. When I kept seeing the trailers for this, I actually thought it looked good. It doesn't really look like that my type of movie, but I figured it would be good. And yeah, it got 87% and Rotten Tomatoes guaranteed fresh, so that's good.
Would you say that it looked dope?
It looked dope, and the other thing is, when I saw the trailer, it had a bunch of people I had never seen before, and I guess that's like this breakout roles for some of these young actors and actresses. So, cool.
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
Dope. We're gonna wrap up this segment pretty quickly, but I did come across an article on IGN. I'm not gonna pull it up on screen or anything, but it was the biggest summer flops thus far. Now that we're coming to the end of summer here in a couple weeks, can you guess the top five summer flops of 2015? I'm sure you can at least get three of these, but you could maybe get four.
Oh, I don't know. Stuff like this is hard for me.
Just start guessing. We talked about a lot of these, and we talked about the flops and the ones that weren't very good, and we literally went down each week and looked at like how good Jurassic Park World was or Jurassic World was doing compared to the other ones. So give me some that you know for a fact we talked about.
Jurassic Park. Oh, what is that?
Oh, we're back without a logo.
Yeah, for those listening, our TV behind us was malfunctioning and now it's working. So yeah. Hooray.
No, Jurassic World broke all the records. The biggest flop.
Did that bad? What?
It broke all the records. It beat every movie ever.
Yeah.
So what were the movies that didn't meet up to expectations? Because summer blockbusters are all about one thing, making that cashola. They don't. Summer blockbusters do not care about the Academy Awards. You know, 8 months from now, all they care about is making that dough.
Wow. I remember there was like this one that came out and it still lost to something.
You got to get at least one. Come on. We've talked about so many. We've talked about so many of these. Let me look through here.
Dude, it's hard for my memory to work this way.
We've definitely talked about three of these in depth.
Dang. Transporter refueled.
I'm not sure the expectations of that movie were sky high, like some of these other big budget, lots of money being poured into them and not getting very low scores and thus not, you know, bringing in the money.
What about that Disney movie?
That's on here.
What was that called? The future thing?
Tomorrowland. We talked about that one because I actually really enjoyed that one. I think a lot of the reviews basically said it was a you either hate it or love it movie, and I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty good and it was worth seeing. Yeah. I didn't think I would like it when I first heard about it. Wow. So that's one. Mm-hmm. That was number one on my list. What's another one? We've talked about like these at length. In fact, that's the only one on this list that I have seen. All the other ones I was not willing to go see. And Tomorrowland was kind of a last second, like, I'll go see it kind of thing.
Can you give me a clue for one?
We called it a flop in the name of naming it.
The Fantastic Four.
We called it the Fantastic Flop. It's like literally 2 weeks in a row. The title of our podcast was Fantastic Flop. Okay, so that was one of them. What's another one? With an actor who used to be like A-list, but has really gone downhill, and he makes all of his own movies, and he always has his same cast and crew do it.
What's he look like?
He was on SNL. He's just really gone downhill. He just makes whatever the F he wants now with Kevin James and other people.
I don't know.
Adam Sandler?
Oh, what? I didn't know that.
Pixels?
Oh, yeah. I remember that movie.
Okay. But you don't remember... See, the reason you don't remember any of these movies is because you didn't see any of these movies.
Yeah.
And nobody saw them. Okay, so that's the first three. The other one is The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which had two kind of up-and-coming lead actors in it. Henry Cavill or whatever from Superman and et cetera. Apparently that one hasn't done very good. And then the other one was one I hadn't really even heard of was Aloha. It looked like a romantic comedy with, let's look at that up real quick, actually, because this is the one we didn't talk about at all, was Aloha. Oh, I had Bradley Cooper, Emma Stone, and Rachel McAdams. Didn't even hear about this movie, so. It also got a low. So the funny thing is, okay, so this movie, 19%. I'm going to go in backwards order. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. definitely got some better reviews. So this probably will be the highest rated one. 67%. None of these certified fresh so far. Fantastic Four, we know what that got. Horrible. 9%.
Dude.
Pixels. So the point here of me going through and showing this 72% is that I think the thanks to sites like this and like apps where you Flixster, where you go to see the movie times and basically shows you the score of the movie right next to the before you get it. It shows you how long it is and everything. People are starting to get smarter about which movies they pay to go see. Like, people see that 9% and they're definitely turned off.
Do you think that's good or bad? I feel like that's kind of bad.
It works both ways. Like, I personally want good movies to be made all the time. There are some movies that are, so literally, Tomorrowland, remember I said 50-50? Like, you hate it or you love it? Literally 50%. Like, to me, that is just the perfect encapsulating score of Tomorrowland. But, so all those were pretty rated pretty poorly. But, I mean, obviously, there's going to be movies on there. It's just, if you're, what I've learned, and we talked about this with Alien Isolation being rated a 6 out of 10 on IGN, even though I thought, and many others thought it was a 9 out of 10. And one of the best games I played in a long time, is that if you're excited to see something, you should go see it no matter what the review is. But it's the people that are on the fence that are being swayed one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it just gets Hollywood to make better scripts. It all really just comes down to the script and the acting and the directing. I mean, there's a lot involved, but you start with a bad script, you're not going to make a good movie. So I think people are kind of wearing thin on the whole rebooting everything and sequels everything and not very original ideas and stuff. So.
Yeah. Except Mad Max. That was cool.
Yeah. That was just like a cart chase scene, as we talked about when I said it was the worst movie of the year. All right. News and rumors. What do we got this week? Ooh, we've been waiting for this. The A7R... Mark II DxOMark scores are out. Remember we saw this? We saw this thing and it had the A7R, but then it also had the 5DSR. And then remember the A7R was beating it, and we kind of looked at it and we said, oh man, the A7R2 is going to blow out all the scores.
Yeah.
Well, as you can see right here, I mean, it definitely beats the A7R2 and it beats the Nikon overall, and the overall score is 98, which is still pretty good. I assumed it would be a little bit better, but in terms of image quality, but there has been a lot of reports of issues with dynamic range and the RAW being a little bit compressed. Like, all Sony cameras compress the RAW, whereas like Canon and Nikon, you don't. They're usually like full 14-bit and stuff, which only matters in like very, when you're talking about bit depth, it only really matters in very unique situations, like when the sky is like a perfect blue and then it slowly fades into a different color blue. Like, that's where it will get a little weird.
Defended like a true Sony fan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's good to see that it's, I mean, now, I mean, of all the new best cameras, the best one. I mean, the crazy thing is the low light and the color depth and stuff like that. But we kind of saw that coming, so we'll move on to there. A lot of the thing that people are kind of complaining about is why doesn't the new A7R2 have 10-bit out and a flip screen like the GH4, which was released over a year and a half ago? And I have on screen here some things that it says why not, why it can't, but basically what I see is that I see a very small camera body, and it's not... So the reasons it doesn't have these things is because...
Go on.
The reason it doesn't have these things is because it's not that they were being lazy and they said, oh, they were trying to cut costs or they were trying to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, is this more important? Is having this more important than the camera being small? It's like when the Retina MacBooks came out. They took away the FireWire and the Ethernet cables and everything. So you had to get adapters for all that stuff if you still wanted to use that. But all they were really asking was, is it worth making the laptop 2 inches, like a half inch thicker and way heavier just to have all those things when people don't really even use Ethernet anymore? Everybody uses Wi-Fi now. So that's kind of how I equate it, where the camera, I really like how small the camera body is. And yeah, it could have a bigger battery and have more battery life if the whole body was bigger, but then the whole body would be bigger. And yeah, it could have a sensor that could output 10-bit instead of 8-bit, but then it would get much hotter, so it would have to be bigger to have more thermal, you know, sink, like heat sinks in there and stuff. So it's all, it's basically not that Sony's behind on the times on any of this stuff. And with the whole flip out thing, I personally don't like that when the screen flips out. I think it's super bulky and it's really annoying to use. I use it on GH4 at work. And it's really annoying. I actually like just having the tilt up and down. Now, I wish it also went all the way so you could do like a selfie like it does on the RX 100 Mark III. But just the fact that it could tilt up and down is just easy to put the camera wherever you want. I don't think the side thing, the side folding one's a little bit of a gimmick, I think. But some people like it, so it just depends. Now, the one thing that they should have that they don't have, which is kind of ridiculous, is a touchscreen. I don't know why they don't have a touchscreen on any of their models. I think everybody complains about that. Without reading any of this on screen, I think that that's...
I feel like touchscreen's kind of overrated.
You'd be surprised. It's good for one thing in particular, and that's focusing. So if someone's got a face, instead of like going, aiming, boom, focusing, going back, you can literally touch the face and then take the picture. So it's good for stuff like...
You walk up and touch their face?
Oh my god. The trolling just doesn't stop. All right. RX100 Mark IV. So I briefly talked about this camera because the Camera Labs or the camera store guys in Canada did a review on it. Yeah. But I saw this and I just wanted to clarify that the image quality actually has gotten a little bit better. I was led to believe that the lens was exactly the same, the sensor was exactly the same. Apparently the processor, which makes it shoot faster and all, that's the thing that they basically upgraded.
Yeah.
It actually improves things like, you can see here, the low light sensitivity is better, the dynamic range is like very slightly better, and this is the Mark III, this is the one I have, and this is the Mark II, the Mark IV over here. The overall score is a 70 versus a 67 for these two. So these two are pretty much almost identical, and this one's actually better in every category, slightly better in color depth, but, you know.
And we're talking about the RX100?
Yeah.
No?
Oh. Yeah. So just to clarify that if you were interested in the Mark IV, which is a $1,000 camera, it is worth noting that the image quality actually will be a little bit better, along with the craziest video features of having 4K and all that stuff, which is just insane. And then I did find this other rumor that I didn't write down. And this one, actually, we talked about this a little bit, the 90mm, and I remember I clarified because I was kind of down on this lens when it came out. I wasn't sure if I, like, what I thought the use would be for it. People are getting more and more excited about this lens. There's people talking about on forums about canceling their 85mm Batiste pre-order that I got and getting this one. It's almost the same focal length. It's a much longer lens, and it does have the macro capability, but you don't have to use it for macro. Basically, DxO Mark, which we use for we look at all their tests for all these different things, they're saying this is the sharpest lens they've ever tested, period. For a $1,000 or $1,200 lens, it's way sharper than the Otis or any of these other $4,000 lenses. It's the sharpest lens they've ever tested edge to edge, which is just insane. We saw some pictures of it, like taking ants and stuff, and like, so it has to be really sharp when you're taking pictures of something so small.
Yeah.
But man, imagine this lens with like a A7 R2 at 42 megapixels, and they're saying this is the sharpest lens ever. So you zoom in on that, you know, to down to 100%, and it's still going to be super sharp, and that's cool. That's good to know.
So you're going to get it?
No, probably not.
But it's the sharpest ever.
I know. But it would be a... I hate getting lenses that are purely for photography. Like, this is a purely for photography lens, so... A little bit worried about getting it for that reason. And then I have one more kind of rumor. There's nothing really out there. Where is the 5D Mark IV? You're the Canon fanboy. Why don't you tell us?
They're working on it so that it kicks Sony's butt. That's where it is.
I think you're correct. I think that is exactly what they're doing. I think the A7 R2 has come out, and they're like, holy crap, now Sony has full frame 4K camera. Like, we were just going to, they were probably like literally in October or September just going to release it as is, and it was not even have 4K or any of that stuff. Maybe external 4K like the A7S does. And then they're like, and they saw the A7 R2 come out, they were like, let's go back to the drawing board. We'll wait until January, which is honestly the smart thing to do, because if they release another subpar camera like that doesn't even have 4K internally now, when now all these cameras have it, man, like they're gonna, and this is their video DSLR camera, so
I feel like you're using some pretty strong negative words there, Aaron.
People hate it on the comments when I get all negative about Canon. I freaking hate Canon. Like, they're, well, all I have to say, if they come out with the 5D Mark IV and it has internal 4K, I will applaud them because that means that they went back to the drawing board and took out the sensor and remade it from scratch, because I assume, my guess was that they did not have that technology ready to go. Because I was surprised. We were debating on the show whether or not the A7R2 would have internal 4K. It seemed kind of like a stretch. It seemed like, oh man, that's like the pipe dream. And then all of a sudden it did, and it was like, whoa. So now it seems kind of commonplace. So any camera that comes out after this that doesn't. Yeah.
I have a rumor.
What's up?
What's that one company that does like the portable cameras and stuff like that?
GoPro.
No, I'm talking about like the ones that have film and stuff.
Kodak?
Yeah, I think that's them.
What about it?
They're coming out with a new snapshot camera.
And it uses film still?
It uses this weird thing where it uses heat to like transfer the light to the thing. It's supposed to be this inkless printing thing. I don't know, it's weird. And like, it's this little camera. It's basically like,
is it digital or is it film?
Film, I guess, technically. I don't know. It is weird, but it's basically supposed to be like a new updated like point and shoot camera type thing.
I'm sure that's going to catch on for sure. I mean, everybody wants to replace their new... I mean, the iPhone 6S is about to be announced next week, and they're saying it's going to be the most new radical update to the lens. that's now going to start blowing out some of these cameras that we're talking about.
No way.
Well, no, of course not. But Sony makes those lenses, as we've talked about. Well, the sensors, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Uh-huh, sure. All right. Let's have our battle. Film glossary turn battle. First ever.
Oh boy.
I'm interested to see what happens because all the pressure's on me because I went to film school, so I should know most of these. I have a feeling the way that you're going to phrase these is going to be very tough. Would you like to go first?
Okay. You mean like go through my whole list?
No. We'll go one at a time.
Okay.
So Colton picked out the H's and I picked out the G's. So he's going to do the... And we're starting from scratch for this one. This doesn't count to his final score or anything, but we have 5 each, and we're going to go through these and see who wins.
Okay. First, my first word is homage.
Wait, is homage spelled with an H?
Yeah.
I thought it was O-M, huh?
According to this, yeah, okay. I'm pretty sure it's
homage. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Homage.
That's right. Okay, go ahead.
Are you scared?
A little bit.
It's usually a respectful tribute to someone or something. This often occurs within a movie when a reference is made to another film's scene, image, etc. True or false?
Can you repeat that last sentence?
Yeah. It's when a reference is made to another film's scene, image, something like that.
True.
Yeah. Okay. It wasn't a trick or anything. Okay. I'm just giving you a bone, dude.
Okay. Gaffer. It's a name for somebody on set. It's like a director, there's a gaffer. It's basically this person's role is a multi-use runner on set. Does various jobs like hold the boom and other camera related tasks.
Dude, I don't know.
It's just the general term for like that kind of like, not the talented guy, just the guy that does all the brute, you know, work kind of thing.
Gosh damn it.
Oh my God. We gotta speed this up. This is gonna be
true.
That is false.
Gosh! Dang it!
Okay, so the reason that's false is that a gaffer actually works with the lights specifically.
Oh.
He holds the lights, he sets up the lights. Now the DP actually kind of figures out where the lights are going to go, but the gaffer, he tells the gaffer to go do it. All that other stuff, there's a boom operator, there's,
OMG.
you know, everything else.
I didn't realize that. I thought a gaffer just does random things. Like, what about gaffer?
Specifically lights. Okay. Good. Currently... 1 Aaron,
gosh,
0 Colton. Live update of the score.
Okay. Next thing I have is Haze code.
Oh, man. I've never heard of this one, so go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's the Motion Picture Production Code of 1930, which sought to standardize the types of cameras and film utilized to create motion picture films. True or false?
I mean, I feel like that could be true, but I'm going to say false.
Good job.
What part of that is false? Is it the 1930s part?
No, it was. It did originate from 1930. It wasn't to standardize the types of camera and film for...
That did seem weird to me.
Yeah, it was actually a set of moral guidelines for filmmaking. Like, oh, you can't show a certain amount of skin.
Mm.
You can't kiss for this amount of time on film. Yeah.
I mean, because basically, like, I mean, obviously, even to this day, like, is anything ever really standardized? I mean, every movie you see is shot on a different camera or a different aspect ratio or a different whatever. There's never really been standards. It's kind of like whatever works best for the film kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It sought to. It didn't do it.
2-0.
Dude.
Here we go. Gel. Used exclusively for lighting in order to change the color, thus change the mood and feel of a shot.
Yeah, true.
False.
Gosh, dude!
It's not used exclusively.
Oh,
because
because
back in the day, especially in black and white films and anything else, they actually would put on gel all over the lens.
Dude, that is lame. Yep.
And you still see it even today. Like, it's not all created with light. Sometimes they just throw a filter over the lens.
Yeah, that is so...
2-0.
Yours are dirty. This is not... Yours are dirty, man.
You better dirty yours up a little bit then.
Okay.
Man, once we get to 3, you don't have a score.
Gosh.
We're not even going to have to get all the way through this. Oh, this don't call it a comeback. Here we go.
So, the next one I have is called High Concept.
Okay, I know what this is. We have a poster behind us, Jaws. This was a High Concept film. go ahead and let's hear your definition. Hopefully I get it right and don't get tricked.
I have here...
Star Wars, also a high concept film.
The saleable or marketable elements of a film. Like a main premise of a film that basically can be expressed in a simple formula in a few words.
True.
Got it, yeah.
You thought the water was safe.
Uh-huh.
A long time ago, a galaxy far, far away. High concept. Which, the thing when you learn about that, it's kind of like... That seems like low concept. Like high concept seems like highbrow, like it'd be like subtext level kind of stuff, but no, it's actually super in your face, obvious.
Yeah, I read about that too.
Okay. So 3-0. All right, you can get this one. Grip. The key grip answers to the gaffer. So, in hierarchy, you know, in terms of going up to the director or whatever, the key grip would answer to the gaffer. We already know what a gaffer is now. It's a lighting dude.
Yeah. False.
Yeah!
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Oh, wait.
No way!
True.
No.
True.
Accepted.
It is true.
False.
I'm sorry.
A BS question.
I'm sorry. So the reason it even tricked me is because I used the term key grip, which is actually the leader of the grips. But that makes it sound like he might be more important than the gaffer. But he's actually not. The gaffer is actually in charge of the lights, and so it goes cinematographer. So in that order, it goes cinematographer, gaffer, then key grip, because the key grip moves around like the camera and he moves around set pieces and mise-en-scene and stuff, but he actually answers to the lighting guy because the lighting guy is more important than him. So
no way, is brutal.
So
dude,
officially you've lost because it is 3-0 and there's no way to come back, but we'll keep going because I'm interested to see what other questions you have for me.
Okay.
Well, I feel, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm actually happy that this is the case, because or else it'd be pretty freaking embarrassing for me.
Okay, the next term I have here is handle.
Good.
It's, do you know what it is?
No. I mean, I might be able to figure it out. I like.
It's a set of frames from a film roll used for identification purposes.
Like a keyframe. A handle? False.
You're right.
What is a handle?
Yes. So what a handle is...
That just doesn't make sense. I've never heard that in terms of...
It's an extra number of frames attached to the head and tail of an optical print as a safety precaution.
Like a pre-roll and post-roll. Okay. Yeah. I just never heard of it in terms of like selecting like which... Yeah. That's just in the can kind of thing. 4-0, baby.
So...
Mama, that film education paid off. All right. Gross. The box office take total amount of money taken during theatrical release, including earnings from film rentals or sales. Gross revenue. We talk about this all the time with all these movies coming out.
False.
That is false. Why?
Because you don't rent out the films.
So I included, the actual definition would be not including earnings from film rentals or sales because that happens after. This is talking about just the release while it's in theaters and people are going to pay to see it with their tickets or whatever. 1 point.
Yes.
All right, go ahead. Let's wrap this up.
The last one I have is called Hiss.
Hiss?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so whack. It's
if I can go 5 for 5, that'd be pretty impressive. So this pressure's on me again.
Image noise caused by imperfections in the film reel.
You said image noise. Yeah. False.
Yeah.
It would be audio.
Yeah.
See, guys, I've had plenty of episodes to work on tricking him into making my questions harder. Because really, honestly, the definitions are just so easy that you got to kind of like throw a little curveball in there. So you'll get to that. You'll get there. All right. 5-0. I'm proud of that. Thank God. All right. Final term. Generation. Basically, I'm just going to give you the definition. A third generation videotape would be 3 steps from the original master. True or false? The term generation in film means, you know, how many times a piece has been copied. So if I said something was third generation, then that means, true or false, that it's 3 steps, three copies away from the original master. True or false?
True.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Good job. 2-5. I'll take it.
Yes.
All right. Let us move on. You're going to talk more about stuffs and things.
Magical
and
stuff.
And VR and...
Yeah.
Oculus Rift coming out at the beginning of the first quarter of 2016.
Yeah.
All right, what are we talking about?
Okay. So, yeah, I was thinking today of what I wanted to talk about, and I kind of got hung up on virtual reality again. And I know before we were talking about virtual reality, right, and I was talking about, you know, options for immersing the audience type of thing, you know, like using it as a tool or whatever to make the film experience better, like that way. But I stepped back for a second and I thought about how it could actually help somebody actually creating the movie, like in the production stage. And
like an Avatar type movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. That just made me think of another idea. But anyways, so basically, like right now, we had the the Gear VR. Here we tried it a little bit. It was interesting. The technology is not really that crazy right now because you can still see the pixels.
Like, hey, I think when you put the iPhone 6S on there, man, you're not gonna see no pixels.
Get out of here! Oh my! Don't even get.
To Whatever. Go.
So, yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, in regards to that, I think the technology will really take off once these screens actually get better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one of the most impressive things I took away from the Gear VR was the experience of sitting in the theater and watching the movie on screen. Because it really felt like I was actually in the movie theater, you know, looking at it. It was pretty cool. So then I was thinking, okay, like, you know, obviously when you're creating a film or whatever, your goal is to, you know, create some sort of viewing experience type of thing. So wouldn't it be cool if, you know, you're filming a scene or whatever, you can get a stream of what you're filming onto the virtual screen in a VR goggle so you can get a feel of what it actually is going to be like in theater. I mean, like, yeah, you can look at it on a little screen and stuff like that, right? But you can, I feel like you can get a better understanding of what the actual film experience is going to be by having a virtual theater there.
This is giving me nightmares of when Peter Jackson had his team write do storyboards in blue and red so that he could look at it in 3D and be like, oh, yeah, that tree and that dwarf right there. Yeah. That is like, it seems a little bit gimmicky for a filmmaker. I think filmmakers have enough in their head already that they wouldn't really use this. So I'm not really buying what you're throwing down in terms of a filmmaker utilizing that to sit in a theater and look at it. I think it's a little gimmicky.
What? Really?
No, honestly.
Well,
I think,
what, as opposed to what? Sitting there and looking at a like a little like monitor thing like that?
Yeah. Because they're not just looking at the overall experience when they're looking at that. They're looking at the mise-en-scene. They're looking at little pieces of light and flares and all the little intricacies, and more than anything they're looking at the performance, and they're watching the performance back and seeing it was that believable. And the other thing is when you're doing the whole virtual reality sit in the movie theater thing, you have audio, and the director doesn't really get all of that. He just has whatever's there on set currently to look at. He doesn't have all the different sound effects made and all the different everything.
Well, yeah, obviously there's gonna be people.
So I just don't know that it's really that. I don't know that would be worth it at all in terms of that sitting in the theater kind of look.
Well, I think it could be a useful tool. And also, like you were saying in regards to like Avatar and stuff like that, it got me thinking. Oh, it'd be cool to actually like. Maybe even like an augmented reality type thing where, you know, maybe if you already have your stuff done, like your computer graphics or something like that, mm-hmm. you can just overlay it in real time to the thing so you can get an idea of what it might look like.
Yeah, that would be different because especially for the actors and like, so Finn, you're flailing around this lightsaber right here and like you have no idea what you're killing because you're killing like this big angry monster or whatever, right? Well, put on these goggles and then like you'll see like we'll see the first take we just did and you'll see like what it kind of looks like, and then now go do that take again. Now you know how big the thing actually is and compared to you and like what it's going to look like, what angles we're using. Like to me that is more of what would help for kind of the actor's visualization, because at the end of the day, the director has everything in his head. He's the only one who 100% knows what everything's going to ultimately look like. The actors and actresses have the hardest time of that. That's like their job, is trying to envision that and try to live that and feel that. So especially when they're on a green screen set, like a lot of these movies are made nowadays, and they're just flailing around and attacking stuff they can't even see, it'd be very useful to put on some goggles and be able to see their first take and then be able to play it back. Even if it's like a low quality render or whatever of thing, just to live play that back. That'd be cool. Though I don't know why you need virtual reality for that. That's where I'm kind of like lost. Because I'm not sure that I'm buying virtual reality for this aspect of it. Because they could just look at that on a screen as well.
Because it's the future, Aaron.
Not buying what you're throwing down. Sorry.
It's immersive.
I know it's immersive for the final piece viewer. You know, it's only immersive once you add everything, like the audio and all the graphics look good and realistic and everything looks believable. Then that essentially what virtual reality is just tricking your mind into thinking it's real. I don't know if you saw that they have an Oculus Rift setup where basically you lay down in a chair and they blow wind in your face with fans and it kind of moves and you can literally fly over New York, and like your brain is freaking out because like once you put the goggles on, 5 minutes into it, you think you're literally flying. Like there's wind, there's everything moves exactly how you move, and it's a little scary actually, but you know.
Yeah.
So it's all about tricking your brain. The virtual reality thing for me during the process of making something, just I don't buy it that that's an added value, and I think that's even more of a distraction than anything else.
Well, you're entitled to your
opinion. Sorry to go down on your thing.
No, it's okay. You can live in the past, Aaron, but we're going to the future.
I'm sticking with my Curb TV, yo. All right. Let's. We have about 20 minutes left, so let's have our final fight, segment 5. Excited for this one. Last time you went first, so this time I think I should go first. Let me see how I should build this up. So my cameo is in a movie that we've talked about recently. The hint of it was in the quote of the day, or the quote of the week. This person was playing themselves in this movie. And one of the main actors in this movie kept harping on him and kept saying his initials, and you're kind of like, BM, who's BM? What are they talking about? Where are they going? Oh, they're showing up at this BM guy's house. Who's BM? And then you realize it's Bill effin' Murray. And not only is it they go to Bill Murray's house, he's in the movie and he's a freaking zombie. Or at least you think he's a zombie, and then it turns out he's just pretending to be a zombie so he can fit in with the rest of the zombies in Hollywood. I'm, of course, talking about Zombieland. The greatest cameo, in my opinion, the most impact on the actual plot and movie, and what made the movie actually funny and memorable to this day to me, was Bill Murray in Zombieland. So that's mine.
So you're saying it's the best cameo because...
Oh, we'll argue about this, but go ahead and do yours.
Okay.
I want to know what you're talking about so I can have some arguments.
Yeah, see, this is hard because...
Go ahead and build up to it. No, I kind of want to guess. You didn't guess mine. But obviously the quote of the day was by Bill Murray, so I figured.
Okay. So, mine is actually from like a series of movies. There's been multiple movies. They've come out pretty recently, I would say. They're recent movies.
I hope it's not The Hobbit.
Dude, that was my other choice.
Really?
Yeah, with Stephen Colbert, just because I like Stephen Colbert.
Stephen Colbert was in The Hobbit?
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, he's like kind of low-key. He's not even a real character. He's a guy with an eye patch.
Man, I hope your cameo is more than a guy with an eye patch, but go ahead.
So, yeah, there are a series of movies. They're all kind of related. They have comic book characters in them.
Ooh. Stan Lee is your cameo. Yeah. Uh-huh. In which particular movie?
I don't really have a particular one.
You don't like the one? You got to have a certain scene that he actually pulled off more than the others.
Which ones were he in?
I mean, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. I know he's in all the Avengers. I know he's probably in any of the Avenger movies, including Captain America, Iron Man.
I'll just go with that Spider-Man one. I thought that was funny.
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure, it's like one scene.
The Amazing Spider-Man?
I don't know which one it was, but it was a scene where they're like in the library or something like that, and then like a table gets flung at him, and then Spider-Man gets a web and pulls it away from him. He's like sitting there just listening to stuff on the headphones.
No, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a lot of people... Okay, so we'll start this argument. As you know, Peter Jackson's in pretty much all of his movies as well. All the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movies and stuff.
Yeah.
I personally do not like when there's just a random person. Mm. It is a cameo. It definitely is. And he's not even playing himself. He's usually playing some different random character.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like almost like the Wilhelm scream, where audio guys, like geeky audio guys, they just put it in there because it's part of film history and people recognize it. But more often than not, it actually ruins the scene because that scream, while very infamous even,
it's distracting,
is a pretty bad scream. Like, it's a pretty bad audio sample from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Or whenever I think it was like 55 or something like that. It's a pretty bad. So for me, when you see Stan Lee in these movies, it's a little bit distracting. A little takes you out of the moment. Now, some people like it. It's like, oh, yeah, there's Stan Lee. It's all the dorky people who, you know, are like, who know who he is. Some people probably don't even realize. They're like, why is that guy randomly in every movie? I like when my cameo actually affects the plot and is a contributor to the arcs of the characters and has significance. And it's the guy that you didn't expect coming, kind of like Matt Damon from Interstellar. You know, you just didn't expect him to be in that movie. And then he was. And it's like, whoa. But same thing with Bill Murray. It's like, you didn't expect him to be in Zombieland, let alone playing himself, let alone playing a zombie playing himself. And it was just super, it was super perfect because it was everything you love about Bill Murray back again in a zombie movie. And then the main actor played by Woody Harrelson just loves him some Bill Murray. And then Emma Stone loves Bill Murray and she's just cracking up. Even when he's dying, like his dying scene, it just goes on for an extra couple beats and it's just hilarious. And to me, like, it actually affected the story and the progression of the character, especially, what's the guy from Social Networks? We talked about him last time. I forget his name. Are you looking it up? No, you're looking up Cameo.
Yeah, I'm looking up the definition of
Cameo. Yeah, and then, I only had really Ooh. 3 points for why I personally liked mine, and it's okay. Just that it's integral to the plot. He plays himself, and it's the funniest part of the movie. Like you think Zombieland, you think Bill Murray being in Zombieland, playing a zombie, and how he talks about how he hangs out with the other zombies, and they're like, "Oh, is he alive too? No, he's actually a zombie." And he's just going on about his life, like in a very. And the best part of it is like when you think of Bill Murray, like the dude, the infamous guy who just goes to random parties and hangs out. If a zombie apocalypse happened, you would imagine that Bill Murray would actually do that in some ironic way. It's like it was even added some more realism to the zombie apocalypse world of Zombieland that some guy would named Bill Murray would just go on living like how he lives. And go hang out at bowling alleys with actual zombies and pretend to be one. So.
Okay. So I can definitely see what you're saying there. And while you were explaining that, I kind of paused for a second to look up the definition of cameo because, yeah, he was really, like, I do agree, he was really cool. He was a cool part of the movie, blah, blah. He was very funny, very iconic, very memorable. But, like you were saying, he was, like, I don't know how big a part, like,
He was in it for 5 to 10 minutes. It wasn't. He might have had 5 minutes of screen time. I don't even know, in that movie. But he was the key turning point for some of the main characters, especially when he killed him and blew him up with a shotgun.
Yeah. So, like, I agreed with what all you were saying there, but I kind of felt a little bit weird because it was like my personal, like, when I think of a cameo. I didn't really think of his part as being a cameo because of how...
It's an unexpected appearance by a famous or someone you weren't expecting to be in the movie who's in the movie.
Yeah, okay, the definition I have here that I found on Google was... It just says, a small character part in a player movie played by a distinguished actor or celebrity. So it doesn't necessarily, like... Yeah, it was surprising whatever.
That I mean, mine fits with that definition. Are you literally trying to argue that mine's not a cameo? Is that what you're trying to do? Because he's probably got like 5 minutes of screen time and he dies really quick. But that's the whole point.
Saying he was like a key.
That's why it was so crazy in that short amount of time he was able to do that. Stan Lee, you know, he's in the movie for a couple shots. And it had no impact. And you don't go leave Avengers 2 thinking about Stan Lee. You leave Zombieland. Thinking about Bill Murray, and that's what makes a good cameo. Remember at the end of 21 Jump Street where Johnny Depp takes off all the makeup, and all of a sudden he was one of the bad guys the whole time, undercover cop. Like you remember that from 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, but that's more like a surprise thing to me. Like
it's,
to me,
it's still a cameo. He's in it for 5 minutes, or he was in it for a couple minutes, and he immediately died.
Yeah, to me, when I think of a cameo, I think of like an Easter egg. Just like, yeah, exactly. Like you were saying, people who didn't know Stan Lee would just be like, who is this weird old guy, right?
I feel like there's a different word for, like I say, when Peter Jackson randomly puts himself as an orc in the Lord of the Rings or whatever, or some random evil guy.
Cameo?
Like, he's in it.
Cameo?
I don't know that that's the word. I don't know that cameo is the word. I think there's an even smaller version of, like, like you said, like an Easter egg. Like, it's almost like an Easter egg. Like, if you didn't watch the behind the scenes of Lord of the Rings, you wouldn't know that he was in playing this part. You would have no idea. Stan Lee at this point is just so ridiculous, and like, he actually gets literally a close up every time, whereas, you know, most directors and or high profile, like, I think Daniel Craig's going to be in the new Star Wars as a stormtrooper. You could say he's in a cameo role, but he's not going to be credited, I'm sure. And he's, I think Simon Pegg is also in it, but he's like in a suit and stuff. So you'll never see them. So is it really a cameo if it was just kind of, this went by real quick? Like with Stan Lee, yeah, not enough people actually know what he looks like for that to even be a cameo. We're talking about distinguished actors.
Oh, okay. No. Don't even get me
he's
started.
He's the comic book guy. He's not the distinguished actor like playing like a very small role. Like Bill Murray playing a small role in Zombieland, to bring it back to my movie, which is totally clearly winning right now, but go ahead.
Look, I want you to read that word right there.
What does it say?
Celebrity. He's the guy who created all this stuff. Like, fine, that's part of the reason why I think it's such a great cameo, because like, he is actually related to that work of film that he, you know, he started. And, like, this is like a film adaptation of stuff that he's worked in. And it's cool that he gets to be part of it, and, you know, he's on film. And that's why I think it's a really great cameo, because, like, he's, like, huge, you know?
But, okay, so I would say that yours has more, that yours would hold up better if he wasn't in every single one. That's the problem. It's worn thin. It's gotten a little ridiculous. It's like the Wilhelm scream. I think that's the only argument I really need there. It's cool, and it's an homage, and it's, like, cool that they include that guy in their movies. But he's in every single one. And it's almost like Quentin Tarantino being in all of his movies, but he plays bigger roles and he actually has an impact and stuff. And so it's a little different. Like, you know, that's Quentin Tarantino, but it's like, well, he actually is playing a character and it's not just some random scene just to throw him in there. What's one movie that he's been in, Stan Lee, that he had a cameo in that he had any impact at all other than just showing him sitting at a table with a bunch of hot chicks? Like, I mean, that's pretty much like the go-to one. It might be a little bit of comic relief, but that's about it.
Yeah, and that's a good cameo, dude.
Bill, you're battling uphill on this one. I have the high ground. We're talking about Bill effing Murray.
Uh-huh.
Everybody loves Bill. So that one's a little tough for you.
Yeah, but he didn't like author like the zombie mythology or anything like that.
For Zombieland, he did. He was the embodiment of what it meant to really live in Zombieland among other zombies and still live on your life. And he literally went through the effort of pretending to be a zombie and dressing up like one and having the makeup and everything else.
But he didn't
in a Bill, like... very Bill Murray way.
Okay, but that's like within the context of his character in the movie.
Okay.
I was talking about like actual Bill Murray riding zombie stuff.
No.
Yeah. Stan Lee.
You can't, we're not arguing about the validity of like what your person's achieved versus what my person achieved. All I know is that Bill Murray is much more well known. I mean, he was crazy huge in the 80s and the 90s. And the fact that he came back after being in a lot of independent films and not really doing too much, nobody had really seen him in a while. All of a sudden, he's in Zombieland, and people are like, "What?" And he's playing a zombie, and then he gets killed, and he has one of the most hilarious death scenes you've ever seen. Like, I mean, you go through the list of hilarious death scenes, like he's got to be up at the top. So that alone, he did all that in under 5 minutes. 5 to 10 minutes, I don't know exactly, but still, it was still within a cameo. So, sorry, bud.
I just don't really feel like it's a cameo.
Oh, come on. You didn't go into. I remember when I saw that movie in theaters, everybody was looking around at each other like, what the heck? Nobody had any idea.
I was just like, oh, it's Bill Murray, cool. Because I wasn't like... Oh my gosh, PM was Bill Murray? Dude, this is such a good cameo.
You didn't grow up watching Bill Murray movies. Have you ever seen Groundhog's Day?
Yeah, oh yeah,
have
I did.
You are
attacking my personal character right now, Aaron. I will not stand for
you're attacking Bill Murray, okay? So I gotta defend him somehow. I mean, we've already proven at the beginning of the show that you haven't seen Lost in Translation. Yeah. So we don't need to discuss whether or not, like, the validity of either of our. I think they're both pretty famous. I think Bill Murray on a cinema level is on a completely different level. And like I said, Stan Lee, it's just my one argument is that it's like the Wilhelm scream. It's like, it's cool, but it's kind of like overused. And he's in every single one. And I even kind of hate when Quentin Tarantino's in every single one. I'd rather them being a background shot, like an Easter egg. Like, I'm sure J.J. Abrams puts himself in his movies, but you'd never know because he, like, puts crazy little small Easter eggs in the back that you'll never see unless you watch the behind the scenes or you go on some website to check it out. I prefer those for those type of things. I want my cameo to be an actual role that affects the plot and becomes the most memorable part of the actual movie.
So you
the cameo is supposed to steal the, like, if you have a cameo in a movie and you're in a big name actor and you're taking this small role, you want to steal the show. Like, you're trying to when people walk out of the theater, you're trying to make sure that they're talking about you. And people were talking about Bill Murray, Bill F. and Murray when they were leaving Zombieland, guaranteed.
Yeah, see, I feel like we have different definitions of cameo. That's where
we're not. Oh my gosh, whatever. We were supposed to be discussing the movie, not cameo definition. Mine fits within it. If anybody disagrees with me in the comments below, go ahead and leave a comment. But I'm sure everybody agrees that Bill Murray in Zombieland was a cameo. You cannot deny that. And with that, I beat you 5-2. And now?
Oh, don't even say it, Aaron. Don't.
I won't say it, but I beat you 5-2. But we'll leave it at that. We'll let the people in the comments decide. We did not have a film a question today because nobody asked a question.
Oh.
So if you guys want to be super famous and have hundreds of eyeballs watch your question be done on the show, leave a question in the comments below on YouTube or send them via an app mention on Twitter. And check out our blog at filmin5d.wordpress.com and download the iTunes podcast at filmin5d and leave a comment and subscribe. And I think that's it. Like I said, we'll keep you updated on whether or not we're going to be doing another podcast, but hopefully we will. We might have to skip a week, basically. We'll probably still get one done in September, but it might be 3 weeks away. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just want to play Metal Gear.
Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yep.
I wish I had the time to play that. I have it. But yeah. Now talk about a video game that's like a movie.
Yeah.
Now the pacing of it, just let's talk about it for a second. It just kills me. Like, everybody moves so slow, and it's like, oh, the guy's pretending to be dead. Let's, like, slowly go up to him, and it's like, it gets me a little antsy. I guess maybe that's the purpose, is to make you, it's like, be a thriller and kind of get your blood pumping and whatever. But it makes me more antsy that it's just moving so slow. Like, I feel like it's just like, this is not like how a person would do. They wouldn't be like, oh, let me check this guy. The mood check, that guy.
Oh, I did not think they were not moving that slow.
Yeah, dude, it was like slow motion for me. Anyways, we will see you guys next time. Thanks for watching. Bye.
Peace.
On one. We should do that. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Film 5D Podcast, episode 14.